time we spoke.
Last time we spoke, we had...
Colossal had come out.
You had talked about Colossal.
Yeah. In the Blood. So it's here.
Yeah, so okay, we had just finished Belco Night.
Yeah.
And okay. Stuff, and it was the next morning we were talking. Mm-hmm. 6 days are now over.
Yes, they are.
It feels like more.
Yep. Clink, Andrew.
Coffee clink. We're doing breakfast instead of the middle of the day. So, I'm going to kick it off hard. I'm going to kick it off with what I think might be our collective favorite. I don't know if you maybe got better, but Nocturnal Animals.
I love that movie, Andrew. I adore that movie. I jokingly sent you a message showing you Amazon saying, why can't I pre-order it yet?
Not your favorite yet? You have something to beat it?
Boy, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about calling it my favorite. I really love Devine. So...
You're holding on.
I'm holding on, but okay. I can neither confirm nor deny that this movie will actually become my favorite by the end of the end of the festival, because it's perfect. It's one long just fuck you from one person to another, and it's beautiful. It's
in written form.
Yes.
I love that movie. And weirdly enough, what I thought was really interesting about it, it feels like he was getting a little bit Lynchian. Maybe it's that opening where all of the women are dancing.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
I
like
can see
there's
that.
not much explanation as to what's going on, and it leads you into that art exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And even the music that goes with it, and some of just the colors. Like, it feels like he watched a lot of David Lynch, but he made a good movie, unlike David Lynch does most times.
Hey, don't say that. David Lynch's movies are all good, they just have different levels of relatability, understandability.
But yeah, Tom Ford, he kicked that one out of the park. I love that movie so much.
And what's interesting about it is, and I don't know how much I should or shouldn't say, but this movie is it's kind of like The Princess Bride in the sense that
they read a book.
Yeah, it's about reading a book, and so you have the book story that is then shown to you on screen, and then you have the real life that is shown to you.
Thank you. Gracias.
The thing about it is, if it was just the story in the book, this movie would actually be pretty decent, because that story is awesome. But the way that they make it merge with the real life and its significance just
upset as to the fact that he talked explicitly about that in the Q&A, because like I could already feel certain hints and certain things. And I was looking forward to watching this again.
Well, but it was more than him. Because honestly, when he was talking in the Q&A, I was listening and I was like, yeah, of course. No. I mean, there were certain specific details that I didn't catch.
That's what I'm saying.
But which would have been even better. And I'm sure there are millions more that, as we watch it again and again, we'll see. But you definitely saw all of the parallels. I think the only thing I didn't realize that he was talking about was a red coach, and I need to watch that again.
Yeah.
But it was super.
There were a lot of great things in there, a lot of great correlations and visual like mirrors going on between the book and the life, kind of cueing you into as to Edward's, Jake Gyllenhaal's character's viewpoint of what happened, while at the same time you're sitting with Adams. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you about something.
Yeah.
So far, I have had two great sleeps through movies that I did not see.
Yeah.
One of them you were at.
Yes, I was.
Raw, which I've heard great things about.
Yes.
Is it great?
It is. So the thing about this movie is, right, it's one of those movies where it's great, but it's silently great, right? You watch it and you feel the thing, you're like, this is pretty good. I'm really enjoying myself. This is kind of awesome. But then, Andrew, I don't know if you're awake for this, but there is a final scene that just blows you away. It is perfect. So,
I movie, scrubbed it from my memory at this point.
Yeah, so this movie is about cannibalism. And
with vegetarians.
Who are vegetarians, yes. And it's so... It's...
Do they address, like, logic of that?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
In the last scene, in a way. It's... The last scene kind of just brings everything together. They're just like, okay, you like this movie. I know. But let me show you how you're going to love this movie. Let me explain to you in 5 seconds. Let me make you make everything click and make this movie even more sinister in a way. Because the movie, it's not, as you go through it, and maybe this is just me being desensitized, you know. You don't necessarily, it doesn't feel like a midnight in the sense that, like, you know, there's all this blood and guts and gore and crazy, like, just weird shit. But, I mean, of course, once you talk about cannibals, yeah, it's, you know.
We apparently have another cannibal movie today.
Yes. Well, more zombie, I think, but yeah, yeah.
No. I've heard The Bad Batch is a cannibal movie.
Oh, The Bad Batch. I thought you were talking about All the Girls.
No.
Okay. Oh, nice. I want to watch that one, even though
I've been hearing...
People say yes or no, essentially.
But I'm willing to hold on to that one. What was it I was going to talk about? So, I went and I got to see my hero, Werner Herzog. I saw his new documentary, Into the Inferno, where he basically goes around the world to these...
Are you watching Salt and Fire, by the way?
No, I'm not. I need his documentaries. I don't need whatever he cooks up narratively.
But Michael Shannon, Andrew?
I got a Michael Shannon movie, and I'll hold on to that one.
Again, he was perfect in that turnaround.
He was great.
I love when it's clear he's sick, and Gyllenhaal's like, are you okay?
Like,
and
I'm
he's
dying.
Coughing. No, he doesn't even say that. He's coughing and spitting and he's almost doubled over, and then he just shoots right back up and says, yeah, I'm fine.
There's the Werner Herzog documentary Into the Inferno. He goes around the world to these 6 spots, which are, I can't remember whether they're the only ones, but they are some of the more notable still active volcanoes.
Okay.
In the world. And he goes around with Clive Oppenheimer of a big volcanologist. He monitors all of these things and knows the science of it. And it's not just as simple as he takes
us... Did you just call him a volcanologist?
That's what he calls himself.
Really?
A volcanologist.
Volcanologist. Okay, right. Wow.
I didn't know it was a real term. I assumed would have just been a geologist that specifies
that volcanoes. That definitely sounded like an Andrew
word. They use it many times. I actually was curious to see if someone would have spelled it with a U... So it would be like Star Trek jokes.
You're a moron.
But we started out with you thinking I was a moron to be like, you're not a moron. No, remember knowing I'm a moron. Which means it sounds like a podcast. And like he goes all over, so he goes into places like North Korea and he talks about filming in North Korea and stuff like that. Which is kind of fascinating because...
He filmed in North Korea. They allowed him cameras.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
And in the Q&A...
Did he say that the Supreme Leader is the supremest and the supremest of them all? Did he have to go that far?
I think he corrected some things with voiceover. But definitely you get to see a little bit of North Korea and you get to see like the people and you're like, you guys are all putting on a show for this guy right now. He's like, yeah, they're putting on a show for me right now. And that's fascinating. But more into like the volcanoes on their own. He goes into some places in like Guadeloupe.
Yeah, they have a big one.
And you see, like, he talks to tribal leaders as well as scientists, because they're like tribes around there.
Really?
Yeah, which still think of the volcano as like a spiritual thing, as opposed to just murdering everyone because there's a...
I thought they were fairly, you know.
There's also regular people there, but...
Because I remember when it actually erupted or almost erupted maybe when we were in high school. And I remember they were talking about, you know, evacuating the island because I guess the island isn't really that big.
They talked about it. And it's just fascinating. I mean, not only do you get like these great images of like looking deep into the mouth of a volcano and seeing the magma and it's boiling up, but you also get just talking to some of these people, where you'll talk to anthropologists, you'll talk to historians, you'll talk to tribal people who will tell you about, tell you things that we will laugh at because we're like, oh, it's not science, you know. Right? They'll talk about things like the volcano, that spirit, and it only talks to my brother because he's a brother spirit of it,
mm-hmm.
and he tells him secrets. And then Herzog will talk to him and be like, so have you gotten your brother to tell you any of the secrets? He's like, I got a few. And like, those are the kind of things that we might laugh at watching the movie.
Yeah.
Because in our head it just sounds dumb.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But it's still fascinating to me, mm-hmm. to see these people. And it remains...
Yeah, how they make it, right, spiritual.
Yeah, remains more and more fascinating to me because, as I keep telling you, the thing I love about Herzog and his documentaries is that he comes off more than any other documentarian, I feel, as naturally curious, right? When I watch all other documentarians, it's almost like journalistic. It's almost like, mm-hmm. they found a story which they know they can sell,
mm-hmm.
and they are taking us in a journalistic fashion to try and explain the story, whether they do it well or not, here or there. Herzog feels like a guy where someone told him they're volcanoes. And there's magma,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, I'm interested, I'm now going to find the people and ask them questions. Like, I'm not even certain as to how prepared he is to do interviews. I feel like he just sits there and just keeps going down a rabbit hole,
mm-hmm.
and edits it.
Which would make sense as to why that last documentary watch was horrible from him.
But it's just always a joy to watch Herzog docs for me.
Yeah, it is. He's great. And that's the thing about guys like him. He's so good that when he misses, when you watch something and you're like, oh, this is horrible, you're still like, all right, what's the next one?
All right, let's talk about this because I know you don't like it.
Okay.
And I don't love it. I don't think much of it. I think very much the way you think of these movies, Birth of a Nation. Right? We saw this together.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of put it on the one that you've been waiting for to say, yeah, it's another slave movie, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that great. I didn't much like the way it went.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I definitely feel like I'd still be interested in his next movie, assuming it's not this. Right? If, like, he just makes another regular movie.
Assuming they allow him to make another movie. Oh, my goodness.
They will.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to...
Do you at least feel that, like, a little potential in what he could do, given a better story?
Possibly. I mean, listen, the technicals were all there, and there was some storytelling. I always have a big bias to these kind of movies, and so it might be a little bit harder for me to see the spark outside of the technical stuff. But because movies like this, it's hard for me to... I remember when I was young, I could do it because we had all sorts of influences and people were like, you should watch this. And I'm like, all right, cool, I like it because I'm young and I'll do whatever you say. But if for movies like this, where essentially the selling point is this is an important thing to watch and not, all right, we're going to engage you in some sort of way. Then I have a big problem with that movie, and it's now become a thing that a movie like this has to engage me about 10 times harder for me to like it, you know?
I don't know, is there anything you've seen that I should be looking out for now? I know I have a Colossal ticket and I'll see that towards the end.
Need to watch Colossal. Let me tell you.
Like, what have you seen that I've not been
with
you?
Well, we have not talked about this. But we watched Julieta.
Right.
And Andrew. That
I was
movie
trying
is
to
superb.
Write up something about Julieta and I just couldn't find the words.
Oh. Right? It's great because it's one of those movies where actually it's not, it's so understated, right? It is not a midnight movie. It is not even Nocturne on Animals where it's just this vast story. It is really this woman coming to terms with or retelling her life story, and trying to come to terms with something drastic, something traumatic that has happened to her. And, well, I don't even want to, it's not life story, it's her story about her meeting her husband. But it's just, Alma Dovar is
like, what I loved about it, what I loved about it is that even though it's like a lot of Alma Dovar films, mm-hmm. in that it's a very emotional film, it's a very self-reflective film, it also, weirdly enough, felt like a mystery noir movie,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
tone-wise and just how it moved forward. So like, when it starts off, she's all fine and everything's going on, and then someone talks to her about somebody who we don't know anything about, and it hits her, and she like mm-hmm. falls into this moment of, I won't want to say the word depression, but like mm-hmm. shock, and like she now needs to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's not like she's a detective where she's walking around and trying to put together pieces,
yeah.
other than retelling her life, so
in
that
a way,
we know.
But in a way, that's what it is. Yeah. It's the story puts it on you. She's telling it to us so that we can try and put things together and be like, all right, why did this happen? How did this happen? How is she going to solve it?
And also, Almodovar does what I love the most, which is he has these great characters in it, including like the maid nanny person. I can't remember her name right now.
Mariam, I think.
Marianne. And Ava, the artist neighbor,
mm-hmm.
Friend.
mm-hmm.
And even the next boyfriend who she has at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
All of these characters in the movie are just great characters.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed just hanging out with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have loved to have a movie with just Marion, right? Just showing up with her, just staring down at people, being like, oh, you're one of those.
mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. I loved Julieta. I honestly don't know how I could. I was just sitting down for like a good hour trying to write about Julieta, and I just couldn't find the words, so I skipped over it, and hopefully one day I will write about it.
Hopefully. So, Andrew, I watched Handmaiden. How was that movie for you?
It was great. I got to standing line, and they told me, Andrew, there are no more tickets. Go home.
Oh, that sucks. I
did not see Handmaiden.
So good. Park Chan-wook, again, great. It's actually a little different from many of his other movies. And
I heard it's a porno.
It has some sex in it.
Is it like Luis Gomez Color, where certain people might just only talk about it to be like high schoolers can watch porn? Tell your parents you're watching this art film and you'll get some porn that you can watch.
So okay, it did evoke in me some memories of Luis Gomez Color. For a couple of reasons. One, because there was some scissors in me. And that's the high schooler in me, I'm sorry. But two, because what happens in this movie is it takes the same story from multiple angles. And so there's a sex scene in what they call the first chapter,
mm-hmm.
or the first part, that is then revisited in the second part.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely, it doesn't go on as long as
Blues or Must Follow.
Blues or Must Follow, but it feels similar. It's like, okay, whoa, I think this is a little bit extra. But Andrew, this movie is great. It's
Is La La Land all that I want it to be?
I think you would love it.
You think I would love it? Okay, great. I've heard very tempered reactions, and I wonder how much of that is hype build up and then what you get.
Yeah, they've definitely tried for the Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly kind of musical. So there are scenes like that. There are scenes like Singing in the Rain, where they're just like, you know what, we're going to, for a better word, La La Land. And we're going to have like just this crazy new set that is imaginary. Right, but at the same time,
I love that scene though. In American in Paris and Singing in the Rain, when they mm-hmm. have that big finale, like completely imagined mm-hmm.
and it was
fantastical
a finale.
Scene.
It was a finale too.
It's great.
Yeah. And what's actually kind of cool about it is they start off the movie with a crazy, ridiculous musical number. Where I remember thinking to myself that I knew it was a musical, but I didn't realize how musical it was going to be, because essentially the first scene, they're just like, listen guys, this is what you're about to watch. If you don't want to watch it, just leave. But it was pretty decent. I don't know if I could stump for it the way I'm stumping for Divine or Nocturnal Animals, but it was a decent movie.
Okay. What should I tell you about? All right, let's talk about a movie you would love. Right? Mm-hmm. Not because it's that great a movie, but because this is the kind of movie we're getting
to. I know, I'm just saying that we have to.
I think we have two more that we need to talk about together. Okay. This is the kind of movie you love because A, it's British. B, it's something you can fall asleep to.
Mm-hmm.
And C, it has Bill Nye in it.
Oh, perfect.
It's Lone Scherfig's latest movie, Their Finest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to call this the greatest movie ever made. It isn't. Mm-hmm. Right? It's very much it's talking about the propaganda movie making that went on during World War II in England, with the people left behind during the war who were still trying to make a living as actors and writers, and they worked for like pretty much the military almost, where the military will come to them and tell them that no, you can't have a scene where the boat fails because of this, because we don't want them to think our engineering is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it has Gemma Arterton in it and Sam Kaplan, and they're very all chummy and very nice, even though there's always a weird undertone to it. So
mm-hmm.
you'll have them talk about the fact that they hired this woman, Gemma Arterton, to work with them to help write women's dialogue. Right? And they'll even refer to it as the slob. But we all smile at it because it's that weird look back to those days.
Mm-hmm.
And also you have this thing where even though they're saying these things, they're all falling in love together and it's all happy and nice. And,
mm-hmm.
Definitely looks at the war a bit. You see all the bombings and you see everybody kind of worry about what's going on. But it's one of those movies. It's one of those movies that we give our parents and they love. Mm-hmm. Right, from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent movie. It's a well put together little movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. And Bill Nye is great. He does his thing.
Bill Nye.
Right. Took a little break there. I just took your coffee. I don't know why.
I was like, where did it go?
All right. Let's see what we can do because there are two movies I want to talk about that we watched together. Okay. Number one, the less one, I think, Blair Witch.
Well, I think we should leave the second one for a little bit later because there's one more movie I want to talk about that I watched without you.
Okay, alright, we won't talk about Blair Witch then.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to say that I saw Patterson, which is the latest Jarmusch movie, starring Adam Driver, who I have grown to love.
Kylo Ren.
As well as somebody else, some lady who sounds very Spanish. I like her a lot. I like this movie. Listen,
I think it's about a poet.
Yes, it is. It's about a poet. It's about a bus driver who is a poet. It's
so
about
we
a
have
couple.
Been told many times we know nothing about poetry. Why do we care about poetry? Mm-hmm. Poetry isn't a thing. Tell me, do you care about poetry though?
Listen, it's not art. So this movie didn't try to be like a Howl where it's like, listen guys, look at Ginsberg. Look at him howl, look at his poetry, it is awesome. It was more just, it was this quiet, small little movie about a bus driver and his week. It's a week in his life and he's like, essentially every scene, it's delineated in days as well.
Mm-hmm.
And every day fades to black at the end. And every day the man wakes up, he goes and he drives his bus. He comes home and stays with his lady a little bit. Then he goes to get a drink at the bar. That's it.
So it's like 45 years.
If you say so, I don't think I've watched that movie.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it. The old people on their 45-year anniversary. And it's about that week leading up to their anniversary.
I guess, but it's not as dramatic.
I mean, there's more conflict in there, it sounds.
Yeah, there's no real conflict in here. It's, I mean, things happen, but small things. And it is funny because... And Jarmusch even spoke about it because he was there. Some of the things that happen, you said to yourself, oh boy, is this going to happen or is this going to lead to something? And it doesn't. It's just, you know, almost insignificant. But it's great. You know me and Jarmusch movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost
similar. It's like me and Koreeda movies. Like, yeah. I like the little things a lot more than everything else.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this movie almost feels like to me like... Midnight. What was the movie?
In Paris?
No, the same Jarmusch movie where everybody goes
the Midnight Train or something
like
that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I remember that movie. Mm-hmm. I like that one.
Yeah.
So
a little bit.
we saw Arrival, the new Villeneuve film. And I'm not sure where you really fall on it, because I left really quickly. I didn't see you after.
Yeah.
But I like that movie. Mm-hmm. I like a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much I love how it ended, right? Because what I really found fascinating, and we talk about this all the while, I like this concept of seeing people who are great at what they do actually do what they do,
mm-hmm.
right? So Amy Adams' character, the language person.
Sorry, second Amy Adams movie today.
Second Amy Adams
today.
Movie today. There's so many times where the movie allows us to explain language in a way that we might understand, right? But we never would have said out loud because we're not experts in it,
mm-hmm.
right? I always tell people use their words, even though I don't use mine. And I love watching her break down language that way,
mm-hmm.
and make it look scientific,
mm-hmm.
almost as opposed to how I always think about language as being expressive and creative, which it is in its own way. But there is a science behind it of getting things structured right and getting things being efficient and clear and understood. And this movie is all about that. As it, all these alien movies we've ever seen, aliens appear and then we shoot at them, right?
Yeah.
And then we hope we survive,
yeah.
right? This movie is about the moments before we shoot, mm-hmm. where we're like, all right, maybe we shouldn't shoot. And oddly enough, I think it's like the most optimistic movie I've seen at this festival so far, because it thinks of a world where aliens appear in China, in Russia, in Pakistan, in America, and for like a good year or however long it was, they don't shoot them.
Yeah.
They just talk, right? And try to figure out what's going on, and countries work together. And I loved seeing it because it felt like how I imagine. Even though XCOM is a bad example because XCOM involves shooting, it involved the world where XCOM exists, because the world of XCOM is a world where aliens came down, and due to aliens, the world came together, whether it was to shoot or not shoot, that's neither here nor there,
mm-hmm.
and I loved seeing that. But there's a big science fiction thing towards the end, like a big build-up resolution, which I don't really want to say explicitly,
mm-hmm.
for, but I don't know how much I loved it.
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I was watching it and I realized, hold on, I don't think what he's doing here is what we think it is. I think it's something else, and it turned out to be that. And it's just interesting. It's a sci-fi movie. It's real sci-fi because it's not just sci-fi because aliens exist. It's super sci-fi. But still set in essentially what you would feel like is
today.
No laser guns or anything like that. But
not yet. Wait for Arrival 2. Laser guns
this
everywhere.
It's very brooding too. You know? Because you have...
Like, the characters feel depressive, but the world feels uplifting to me.
Yeah. Because you have... I mean, Amy Adams is... in a way, kind of mourning her daughter, and it's just, this movie, I think I like this movie. I think this is one of those where I'm going to just keep watching it.
Me too.
Probably like it even more.
But I think that's about it right now. We could talk about Blair Witch, but I don't know if we really want to talk about Blair Witch.
Not really.
And we'll find out if we want to. Anyways, I think that's it for now.
Mm-hmm.
We can have a coffee clink to cut it out with breakfast. And that's it.
Yeah. I don't know, thanks.